about that. Is that good? Yeah, that's good. Okay. Yeah, I was trying a new thing, and it didn't work. The fine folks at Rogue Amoeba.
Yeah.
You know those kids.
I've heard of them. Yeah, they're good people.
Yeah. We've been using their products since we started this show.
63 years ago.
Right. and they just updated again, Audio Hijack, and added some new stuff and fixed some other things. They have been a terrific sort of technology partner for doing this show, I think.
I've been using the external recorder thing for a while just because the software thing, I don't know. It always makes me feel safer just to have it separated from the computer. But you've never had any real problems with the, okay.
No. In fact, I've got this Tascam Mixcast 4. I've never recorded a show on it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I've recorded little snippets here and there of audio, but I don't record internally to it. I always record with Audio Hijack from Rogue Amoeba.
Now that allows you to, we're doing an ad right now. the great people at Rogue Amoeba, thank you for listening to On Taking Pictures. I don't even know where I was going. But the Tascam thing is what allows you to do the algorithm voice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Satan or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, what makes Just for Men, Just for Men? It's hair dye. Why couldn't anyone use it?
I'm drawing a blank. I'm not sure what you're. For Men hair dye.
You know, what makes it Just for Men?
I don't know.
Because people are always like, this is just for, what's just, why is it just for men? Anybody could use that.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, are you starting to dye your hair now?
No. Would you believe that I was reading an article, the Wikipedia article about the death
Bill,
of
Bill, if your life is to the point where you're reading wiki articles about hair dye, we really need to find you a hobby.
No, I'm reading a Wikipedia article about the death of Osama bin Laden, actually. And apparently, one of the SEALs claims that in a search of his room, they found a bottle of Just for Men hair dye.
Wait, in the hole that he was in? That
in the house,
cave
the
thing?
No, because he died in that house, remember, in Abbottabad?
Oh, right.
But I was just like, man, so yeah, I guess he has to, you know.
I don't know. Does it? I don't know.
There's nothing special about it.
Other than the name, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. How's it going? What's your week been like?
It's good. You know, I'll tell you what it's been like, Bill.
Okay.
You know Meg Hatch, right?
Yes, sure.
Of course you do.
I know her as something else, but go ahead.
Yeah. I knew her
before she was married. Anyway, go ahead.
You knew the artist formerly known as.
Yeah.
I got a chance to sit down with Rob and have a terrific conversation with Rob the other day.
Okay.
And, because he and Adrian are friends and, you know, said, hey, you know, ask Jeffrey to book some time. Let's, I'd love to get to know him better.
Okay.
Man, challenging guy, really challenging, like challenging in the sense that challenges me to do things and think about things that I don't, it's not normally the way I think.
Really?
And, for those of you who don't know, Rob is, he's an author. He's written a book called Attention, which is probably what he's most known for. I'll send you a link and you can put it in the show notes or something, but we were talking about, because I tend to have kind of a squirrel brain where I try and do all the things and I lose focus very quickly and you know, stop me if this sounds familiar for you guys.
I know this about you. Continue.
Yeah. But what ends up happening, and a lot of it is around, a lot of what stymies me around things is money, is trying to figure out, you know, how to monetize it and how to make, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, Sean gives me a hard time and says, I've designed the merch before I've even figured out what the idea is. And that's in some cases literally true.
Right.
And we were talking about trying to focus on things. And coincidentally, I don't know if, have you seen this Johnny Ive clip where he's talking about focus?
No.
I'll send it to you. It's only, I don't know, 30 seconds long, but he was being interviewed and the interviewer asked him what's one of the things he learned from Steve Jobs.
Right.
And he talks about how Steve was one of the most focused people he's ever met. And he said, focus isn't, you don't just decide to be focused, and focus isn't something like, oh, I'm going to work on this. He's like, focus is being, believing in something with every fiber in your being, but saying no to it because you're already working on something else that you believe in. That's focus. And right. That's what Steve was able to do. You know, why he would say, like, why are we even talking about this? We're already working on this. So it doesn't matter how good of an idea that is. This is what we're doing.
Right.
And man, that is so foreign to me.
Do you believe that's, I guess here's my thing about that is that may be true for Steve Jobs. It may have worked really well for Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Is that true for everyone? You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think it can be.
It could be that jumping between ideas is somebody's superpower.
Excuse me. Maybe. I mean, I think it certainly is one of mine, but the other part of that, the other half of that is follow through.
Sure.
And I have notebooks filled with bits and pieces of what could be great ideas if they ever came to fruition, but they will never come to fruition because in order to bring them to fruition, I have to stop doing the other things and just work on that. And that's what I have a hard time with.
Right. It's not that
that's
you think
what is that, almost impossible for me.
Right. It's not that you think that they are necessarily not worthy of the work, or that you're worried that they won't come out well, or are those things also true?
That's also true. Sure. Yeah.
I could put 200 hours of effort into this, but I kind of already think that it might not actually be as good as I want it to be. So therefore I'm just going to give up before I even begin.
Yes. And add the money thing on top of that. What's the ROI? How am I going to make back this time in any appreciable way? How am I going to get paid for this? And that, if I can't figure that out, I leave it alone. Or
so things aren't worth doing unless you're going to get paid for them.
Yeah, because that's part of it. That's some of the old tapes that we're working through in therapy. It's not true,
right?
But it is something that I get tripped up in.
But the alternative, I guess, is that you don't do anything, and that's even worse than doing something for no money.
Well, and here we are.
Right.
You know, right. Here we are.
Yeah, you know, finish your thought. Sorry.
Well, no, go ahead.
It kind of dovetailed into something I was going to ask you about, which is that when you start something, a project, before you even make a mark, do you generally know what it is that you're trying to achieve? And then the second half of that is, how often does it end up being what you thought it was going to be?
The second half is rarely, because I rarely finish it. Because I there are so many stumbling blocks along the way. And again, a lot of those things have to do with money. Like I have a project that I've started working on, and it's something that I've circled around for several years. And I talked about it with Rob, and he said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I'm going to challenge you for the next year. If you can do this for the next year, I want you to not think about money. And, you know, break out in cold sweat. Right. I'm like, bottom lip starts quivering. He's like, it's not that you can't think about it, but for the next year, I don't want you to make monetizing or the need to monetize the stumbling block. If something doesn't land, if something doesn't get built, if something doesn't work on the merits of the idea itself, great. More power to you. But try to not let money be the deciding factor. Let's see where you are in a year, if you can do that.
Right.
You know? And again, you may try things and they fail. It may not come together. It may just, whatever it is. But the other side could be true too. You could finish something. And
it could be more than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah. So I told him about this particular idea, and he's like, it's great. It sounds great. Give your two things. One, take money out of the equation for now.
Yeah.
And number two, give yourself a deadline.
Right.
You know, because we were talking about the book
and
how, yeah, we were talking about how that spun out of control. And I wrote about it in the last iteration, how this thing that could have been you know, it started out as a PDF that I was going to give away, and it turned into what is now a 340-page book that has taken up 10 years of my life. Mm-hmm. I have to learn to say, nope, this is it. So I started actively working on this project, and I gave myself 8 weeks. So end of April, if it doesn't look like it's going to come together, if I don't have something basically sort of ready to go into beta or something, you know, if I can't see a way forward, I have to walk away from it.
I understand.
I'm terrified of that.
Well, how's it going so far?
I've made progress. Okay. I've actually made quite a bit of progress.
Or
progress, if you're listening in Canada.
Is part of your fear that you set yourself a deadline, say, for the end of April. You get mm-hmm. to the end of April, it's not what you thought it would be, or you haven't been making as much progress as you want, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that, and I'm going to use the F word right now, that quote unquote failure puts you back even further, right? It's like this, that as much as he is right, and I think he is right, that it'll be a success, the fear is that it'll be a failure. So therefore, again, it's like that, the paralyzing part of it, right? It's so interesting.
I hear what you're saying. I hope it doesn't fail, but then again, there's a part of me that kind of hopes that it does, because I can walk away knowing that I stuck to it. I can walk away going, okay, it didn't happen. Ideas are not my shortcoming.
Right.
I have ideas all the time. I have notebooks filled with ideas. So it's not like if this doesn't work, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I already know, you know, I've got things sort of queued up that are possibilities.
Yeah.
So I think in approaching it a little bit differently, it's not that I want it to fail, but I don't think it's going to be as debilitating, because I haven't designed the merch. You know, I haven't started working on, well, what's the money angle to this? I'm just looking at the creative. I'm just looking at logistics. I'm just looking at functionality. And that already, you know, that combined with kind of some of the things that we've been talking about in therapy,
yep,
that already feels, and I don't want to jinx it. It's like I've got fingers crossed. I'm white knuckling my fingers. I've got my eyes closed. It feels different. And I hope that's not just wishful thinking and I fall into the same old trap or same old tapes, but there's been such a pressure that I have put myself under when it comes to money for most of my adult life.
Right.
That even if I can let go of that for a little while, it feels like I can breathe a little bit.
You putting pressure on yourself has never been your problem, right? I mean, no. All you do is put pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe what you need to do, like he's saying, but I mean, I'm going to put my 2 cents in too,
yeah, which please, is that, please, please, please.
Is that maybe the last thing you need to do is even your squeezing your eyes shut and keeping your fingers crossed. It's like, no, just, you need to relax all the muscles in your body.
Just, you know what I mean? How does that happen?
But you know what I'm saying? You stressing about whether or not it's going to be success or not, that's the opposite of what he's trying to get you to do, I think.
Yeah. I don't think I'm stressing about whether it's a success. I'm the poorly timed joke there was saying the word different, because I feel like I've said that 1,000 times before. This feels different. This feels different. But then those old tapes start playing and I'm right back to that familiar thing.
Maybe it'll never be different. It's just that you're going to do, maybe it'll never feel different. Maybe you're just going to make a different choice.
And that would be remarkable.
Right.
That would be remarkable. And maybe we're in this period of, you know, the type of exercise that I'm doing, the type of yoga and meditation and going to therapy and putting myself in the path of other people who have different ways of thinking, like Rob, who has different ways of thinking and who has a proven track record of working with people and getting different results than they had been getting before. Maybe it comes down to faith too.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some faith that I need to exhibit or lean into or relinquish control, what, however we want to talk about it. But it feels strange because I've been tied to the monetizing angle for so long, and I've tried to work that unsuccessfully, mind you, but it's still in the forefront. So to let go of that completely, or as completely as I can at the moment, and like I say, just focus on creative and just focus on doing the work and see what comes out of that. Mm-hmm. Even if it's nothing more than an exercise that lasted 2 months and I move on to the next thing, it'll be worth it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I always, from personal experience in situations like this and dealing with the way I feel about stuff, and it's usually my contention that anytime that I think that I am going to feel different or that change is going to happen to me, I'm usually disappointed because I am me.
Yeah.
And I find the only way for it to really work is not that I'm changing, it's the way I react or the way I see things changes.
Yeah.
Because if I'm expecting myself to change after 49 years on this earth, that's not going to happen on a dime or after a conversation. But that's not really what I'm generally trying to do. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That if change is going to happen, it's going to happen very slowly. And you're going to look back 5 years from now and say, oh, that conversation I had with Rob, you know, put me on this different trajectory, but it's not that I jumped to another rail.
Yes, absolutely. And if the combination, again, a combination of sort of therapy and mm-hmm. talking with Rob, if those things, I don't think that they are the cure-all. I'm not expecting that they're going to be some sort of tonic that's going to sort of cure what ails me. But if they can be collectively a catalyst that at least allows me to see those other rails more clearly, then we can work on how do I get to them.
Yeah. 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 Last week, Cisco was in town.
Mm-hmm.
And,
those monochrome shots, you do monochrome well.
You're giving me the thumbs up on this?
Yeah.
And you know, old dancer, photographer, friend of mine teaches down at Sam Houston State down in Texas. And whenever he's in town, it's like, you know, I just, it's an opportunity to make something, right? The reason why I was asking you earlier about the whole, you know, do you have an idea of how things are and do they turn out the way you expect? It's like, I wonder if that's true. How often that is true of people where they have an idea and then at the end, the idea either lives up to expectations or matches their expectations, because lives up to assumes some sort of value system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where different, because, you know, those pictures are different than I imagined them, slightly different than I imagined them being. They're like in the ballpark, but it wasn't like I had some specific idea and then what I got was something that I'm happy with, but it was different than what I kind of expected. You know what I mean?
And can I ask you something about that?
Sure.
Are they different because of something that you did or didn't do? Or are they different because of something that Cisco did or didn't do? And the reason I ask that is Cisco, as a dancer, mm-hmm. as someone who works very hard on, you know, keeping fit, he knows how his body looks.
Yes.
He knows how his body moves. He knows what he can pull off.
Somebody said that in a comment. They said, you know, wow, that guy really knows how to move. And I said, yes, if there's one thing he knows, it's how to move.
So does that rush up against your expectations? Or how does that affect, I guess, your expectation? Because he's going to bring something to it. He knows you say do this, that, and the other, and he's maybe, whether it's conscious or subconscious, he goes, yeah, but I don't look good like that, so I'm going to do it a little bit differently.
Sure.
I know what you want, but I'm going to do this.
Sure. In his, with him, I've known him for 15 years now. We've taken pictures dozens of times, so
yeah,
I know how Cisco moves better than almost anyone. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I know better than other people how they move. I just know Cisco is moving better than I know anybody else is moving. So yeah, that's less the problem. And it definitely wasn't anything Cisco was doing that was right. He was doing it great. There's this wall on the roof, which is what I was shooting against. And I always imagine it being black. But it's not really black. Well, it is black, but it's sort of a matte black that you can see light shines on, you know? Mm-hmm. So even if it actually is quote unquote black, when there's sun on it, maybe it's, you know, 15% gray or 10% gray.
Yeah.
You know, it's that
and,
kind
and
of
And you can't do like a green filter or something to kind of pull that down.
Okay. So, well, that's the thing is that, he was wearing for part of it, he was wearing jeans, blue jeans. Mm-hmm. And the wall, if anything, has a little bit of a blue tint to it.
Ah, so see anything you do to the wall, you're going to do to his jeans.
Yes. And he has black hair. So if I pull the background too much, it'll just block up and I lose this whole top of his head. You know what I mean? There's like these kinds of things, which again are nothing that are his problems and not something that I have to, you know, you really should have thought of that. Well, I was. I mean, we're just playing. It's personal work. But it's, you know, the idea that I had in my head where there was this blackness in the background. I guess what I could have done is gone up there and put Duvetyne against the wall, you know,
and then shot
against that. And maybe that would be even.
And maybe put a little kicker behind the wall, shooting forward at him to give him a little separation.
Yeah, right. All of these things. Now, part of it was that I didn't want to use any lights up there because it was windy the day we were, it was, and I just wanted to see what I could do with hard light. Because that, man, that Herb Ritz look with the hard light on skin.
Yeah.
It's like, it is, I look at it and I can analyze it. I can bring them into Photoshop. I can look at like where the histogram sits.
Yeah.
But it is so hard to get that sort of glossy, polished look. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so hard. And I'm talking about a guy, me in this case, who has, you know, a 16-bit file and I have Photoshop and he didn't, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I look at it and I go, man, how the hell did he do that? Now, he had people with absolutely perfect skin and people who were doing makeup. And yes, he was using filters. Yeah,
and probably had somebody misting their skin to give it that luminance.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. All of that stuff is not untrue. But I am not Herb Ritz, you know? And I don't need to have to be, but there is a part of me that says, you know, you've been doing this for almost 20 years now. You know a lot about this stuff. You could figure this out, you know? Like, if you can't figure it out, I don't know how anybody else does. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have any special knowledge that you don't have in this area. And so I think I got in the ballpark of what I wanted, but I'm still not satisfied and I don't have a good mental recipe for doing it. And so even though I kind of got where I wanted to go, I don't feel like I learned the lessons I wanted to learn in getting there. Does that make sense?
It does. Okay. Let's see. I look at these photographs and you've done several things like this over the years. And I think the power is in the simplicity of them.
Sure.
I think that the, for me, the appeal of these is in that they're not, nothing's overdone. Nothing.
Yes, but in those not being overdone, you know, the composite one is 30 layers.
Yeah.
You know, with you know, six layers of curves to get it to look that way.
Right.
And, you know,
but there's a balance to it.
Well, that's, I guess, what you're basically saying is that I did a good job in not making it look like it was overcooked.
Yes.
But
yes.
Which, thank you. But I guess what I'm saying is that why did it take me 3 hours of cooking to get it to look like it was uncooked? You know?
I think because you had a different target. It's the skill has never, for me, like real talk, the skill has never been your issue for me.
Right.
It's in having a lot of toys and a lot of tools and thinking that you need to use all of them.
Right. Although,
whereas I think you're at your best when it appears, and I know that this isn't restrained. This is Bill exercising a lot of skill and a lot of technique.
Right.
But to the viewer, this looks simple, clean, refined, restrained.
Sure. Yeah.
That's where I think you're at your best for me.
It takes a lot of work to make something that looks simple and refined.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But when it does, it stands out.
Yeah. Well, okay. I agree. I like them and I appreciate that it stands out for you. Mm-hmm. And I think it does. I will tell you from the point of view of clients, they often want something that like pops off the page, not that something that feels simple. Simple to them means easy, means cheap, okay, means...
But there's 5,000 other people that can do it that way because that's what they do.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not a question of skill or technique. It's a question of sort of vision and refinement. And you know the difference, Bill. Mm-hmm. I know you do because sure. You look at these and you go, yeah, there's a little bit of this Herb Ritzy thing, especially that first one. Where he's kind of, you know, looking up and that's a terrific picture.
Yeah.
Had you approached that the same way you approached maybe a client shoot, I think the aesthetics would be different and the photo wouldn't be as strong.
Right. Well, I also would, I doubt that I would have such a strong subject too. That's the other thing with this
maybe,
kind of stuff.
Yeah. Maybe, but even if you were, because you just said it. That's what clients want. Clients want this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they do, or maybe they don't know what they want until you give it to them. I can't imagine somebody like, let's say this is for a promo for the upcoming season of Bloody, Bloody, Bloody Dance Studio.
Right.
I can't imagine somebody looking at these in the genre or realm where they would be, you know, paid for as client work. Right. I can't imagine somebody looking at these going, nah, it's not really what we're after.
Sure.
I can't imagine that.
It is interesting. I your point is taken. I think what it is also that, you know, this involves experimentation and trust between myself and the subject. Mm-hmm. When you're going into something where somebody's paying you and you only have one shot at it, you tend to be more conservative because you need to make sure that you get, there's a chance that you could do this and get nothing.
Sure. Yeah, true.
Right.
Yes.
And in a situation where you're getting paid, you have to have something. So is 80% of something better than 100% of nothing? You know what I'm saying? Like in that equation. And I think part of that is what makes it stressful too. Mm-hmm. Is it like, oh, let's do something with hard light for this magazine. It's like, well, hard light looks good on certain people at certain angles at certain times, you know? It's like one of these things that it's like, I've been staring at them thinking, oh, you know, what could I do better? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm wondering if it matters whether or not I felt satisfied by them, if everyone else seems to like them. Right.
That's a great question. I mean, that right there, we could do and maybe have done,
yeah.
You know, 480
see
hours.
Episode 43, 83, yeah, 26, right. 272.
Do we need to be happy with our work?
That one makes me shiver.
Yeah. it's interesting because I would love to unpack a little if you're willing to. For example, sure. That first shot.
Yeah.
What do you look at and go, nah, that's not working for me? Personally, I think the background, if you went black in the background, this wouldn't be as interesting of a shot. The fact that there is, I don't know where you're at. Are you in some sort of weird pueblo in the middle of, you know, the Sonoran desert? I don't know.
Sure.
Are you behind a movie theater? Like, I don't know. And that ambiguity, like where would he have the balls to do this? That's interesting to me.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to send you, in our super secret Snap channel. Snap channel?
Snap channel?
We're on Snapchat now? Oh, by the way, we'll get back to this in 2 seconds. I just want to tell you that I saw a poster on the wall in a train station the other day that said, like, no more social media or less social media. And I was like, whoa, that's heavy, right?
Yeah.
And then the next panel over was more Snapchat.
Who's going to tell them?
I was like, I see what you're trying to do there, snappy snap. Yeah. But, you know, okay. Now, just
womp, womp.
For this occasion, I just cranked up the contrast and I cut it out and I sent it to you. So you could see. Now, this isn't exactly what I'm going for, but I imagined a even more contrasty version of that where it was almost graphic, almost photocopied kind of looking. You know what I mean? Like a hard version of that.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily better or worse. It's just different. But like I was thinking of going something even more extreme like that, mm-hmm. where almost the only things you saw was where light was coming down on him, not where it was hitting the wall behind him.
Doesn't work for me personally.
Yeah. Okay.
This feels more classic. This feels more, there's more silver here.
Sure. Yeah. I also have a hard time. There's something about the tones on his skin in these pictures. I guess you're right. It's probably that, you know, Ritz or these other people were using, I don't know, baby oil or, you know, some sort of something on people to make them look a certain way. And I made Cisco jump around and it was actually hot in the sun. So, there was some level of that.
Because you start to get that at the base of his neck.
Yes.
You start to get it there.
Yes.
And if that level of sort of sheen, glisten, whatever, was over his entire body, I feel like that would give you more contrast than punching up the contrast.
Right. And I mean, in this file, there's actually also a fair amount of curves, masked curves to give more contrast mm-hmm. to certain places and certain things. But it's mm-hmm. interesting, especially when you're working in black and white. I mean, the tones of skin tones are like, let's say for Cisco, they're in the, I don't know, 60 to 80% range of the histogram. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Somewhere mm-hmm. in there. Mm-hmm. Playing with curves and trying to manipulate those tones in such a way that you're bringing out contrast without also simultaneously flattening out other things.
Right.
Because it's not just like putting it on an S curve or putting a more steep line through that region.
Yeah.
You really got to go in there.
Just cranking the contrast slider in Lightroom.
Exactly. You know. Yeah. It's going in there surgically and like grabbing mm-hmm, this color, mm-hmm. this tone, that tone, bringing that up 3 points and bringing this down 4 points. And like all of that was done. Also, you could theoretically go in there with a brush and dodge and burn to like bring out this stuff. I mean, I'm sure that's the real move.
But it's going to be different than getting that sort of micro contrast that's in refraction of the actual water, right? There's something that, I mean, you can see it. Look at that crook at the base of his neck where it's right into his chest. If you had that across his arms,
right.
You know, and you're starting to get a little bit of that on the forward thigh.
Yep.
You're starting to get a little bit of that there. I don't think it would look the same if you did it in post.
Right.
I could be wrong. I mean, I probably am, but. Right. There is something about achieving that sort of practically and then letting the light sort of do what it does.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
But you're kind of seeing what I was talking about, which is like, it's good. I want it to be even better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just so hard to tease that out. It's so hard to have your, you know, what is the Ira Glass thing? To have your taste outreach your skill.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know what good looks like. And it may be that this passes the threshold of good for a lot of people and they don't see the difference. The problem is I'm one of the people who does see the difference.
Maybe. I mean, it's certainly subjective. I mean, I see where you're going, where you wanted to go with this one that you sent me, but it doesn't, it well, doesn't yeah. hit me.
I mean,
me
that was literally like me just does. Cranking the contrast, yeah, you know, yeah, I was just trying to give you some idea of the, like, and there's also the idea of like blocking up the shadows. So there's like nothing in the shadows, you know, is also interesting to me. So anyway, it's like, I was sitting there and I'm spinning around and I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay. I mean, you make choices for next time, right? That's the whole game. I got two violations this week. One on Threads, they took down a thread that I wrote, community standards.
Mm-hmm.
And one on YouTube, one of my cheese ball videos got taken down.
What, like a music, like a copyright thing or what?
No, it was a, it was a video. It was one of the cheesiest, not pun intended. It was one of the more stupid ones of the cheese ball videos where I had a pot with soil in it and I push a little thumb down in it and I bury a cheese ball like a seed.
Yeah.
And I water it. And then I do this like composite thing where the cheese ball, the plant grows and there's cheese balls at the end of the thing and I grab one and I eat it. Somehow they said that that was for mature audiences only.
What?
Yeah. I was like, what about that could possibly be misconstrued by, obviously it wasn't a human who did it. It was a computer who did it somehow.
Right. Wow.
And then in a thread, I used the term shoot to describe photograph somebody. I was like, I haven't decided what I'm going to do when I shoot him, whatever. And they were just like, we're taking that down for violence.
Oh, for violence. Yeah.
And I was like,
wow.
But here's the weird thing about it is that I said, okay, I'd like to, you know, fight this one. You know,
right.
And of the options that they gave you of like what exactly you're fighting, none of them was you completely misunderstood the meaning of the words that I was using.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It was all just, you know, it's a First Amendment thing. This is all right in the area that I live in. Like all this kind of, you know, really heavy nonsense.
It wasn't just that you took this out of context.
Exactly. Yeah. What if I was saying, talking about a video game? You know, like this is just dumb. If I use the word trigger talking about a flash, are they going to take that down too? You know, for gun violence, it's like,
or in talking about mental health, something was a trigger.
Exactly. You know, I just got a kick out of that being the thing. I'd also like to say that I, sent out a bunch of emails to magazines yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I had an afternoon off, so I'm going to do some marketing. And I hate doing marketing, but I got to do it. And so I sat down and I did some marketing. And I got an email back from a person at one of the places that I wrote. This is so down, like disheartening. It says,
Are you going to read the actual thing?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying who it is, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It says, hi, Bill, some beautiful work. What are your rates and copyright expectations? We don't have a damn system and photos travel all over. I can only contract with photographers who grant full non-commercial rights to the image we publish. And I typically pay $400 for a shoot. So they
$400
want
for the shoot.
Unlimited full use and basically giving up my copyright for $400.
Well, it's non-commercial, right?
Well, yes. So what does that mean? For magazines.
They can't sell prints of it or they can't put it on a t-shirt or whatever.
Yeah, but they could use it all over their organization.
Yeah.
You know, and it's $400 for, you know how much it costs me to have an assistant with me for an afternoon?
Yeah.
$400.
And is this without giving too much away, is this a big, like, is there?
Yes.
Is
this a large big organization?
Really?
Yes.
And what would this have been? Do you have a gauge of what would this have been 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
I mean, I do work like this for other similar organizations and it's usually in the $1,200 to $1,500 range and it's one-time use.
Really? One-time use. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So it's just, it's, yeah.
So is this indicative of the way things
of
are
the industry?
Going or is this an outlier?
I don't know. I hope not. Cause $400, cause I'm not doing a job every single day. I don't have $300 jobs
for the, that's it. No, $400, no residual, no nothing.
Yeah. For a shoot.
For a shoot. So you've got to pay an assistant potentially.
Yes.
And if nothing else, you're spending X number of hours at the shoot and right. X number of hours
Yeah. Plus my doing pictures
your selects and your post-processing.
You know, no one's pictures look the way my pictures look without doing a fair amount of post. So it's not just like, oh, I go snap, 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 and here you go. Here's the pictures. Please pay $400. You know, it's going there. It's shooting. It's coming back. It's culling them down. It's sending them to them. Yeah, it's getting the selects back. It's retouching them. It's sending them back. I mean, I'd end up making $20 an hour, you know?
If
I might as well go work at McDonald's.
Well, especially if you have to pay your assistant.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I mean, you couldn't have an assistant on a job like this. I generally don't take an assistant unless I have to take an assistant on anything less than $1,200 because I can't afford it. I'm not going to give half my money away to an assistant. You know, it just goes to show you how much things have changed over the years. I remember in 2009, and this is like the extreme of it. It's like the work I used to do work. I did work for Time Magazine back when Time Magazine was still Time Magazine. And I think it was really low. It was like $600 for the shoot.
For Time Magazine. Wow.
Yeah. Time Magazine didn't pay very much at all. And that was full page usage. And I think the idea was though that you're doing a full page thing for Time Magazine. 10 million people are seeing it. So usually the rates that people pay, the less known thing it is, the better off it is money-wise. Because the big guys think that everyone wants to work for them, so they'll do it for like nothing.
Go try to work for Disney. They don't...
But this was 15 years ago that was true. So now this woman's basically telling me 15 years later of inflation and cost of living and everything, I'm going to give you 50%, you know, 33% less than that. I don't know. It's just, it's very per your earlier comment about money, you know, like not worrying about it.
That was the gist. I mean, I'll still worry about it. It just, I think the point was not to let it drive what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
When what you're trying to do is, you know, make rent and stuff, you know? Anyway, I got this. And now I sent out 30 emails yesterday and I actually got, which is crazy, I don't know, 8 or so replies from 30 emails, which is a pretty darn good return on, oh, love your work. Yes, we're going to keep you, put you on our list. Oh, let me send you over to so-and-so. And hey, so-and-so, this guy's great. You know, like I got lots of those.
Right.
Which is the best you can hope for. And 8 of them or 9 of them is pretty darn good for say 30 emails. But then you get just one where you're just like, man, what do I even say to this? I have to say, sorry, no, 400 isn't enough, but nice to meet you. You know? I'll just do it
for negotiation in that case.
Yeah. I'm going to write her back and say that, you know, my typical rates on things like this are X and, you know, and see if maybe she's trying to lowball it, you know, cause that's, you know, there is a certain amount of, gamesmanship in all of this, but I mean that the rates are going down and there's less work, you know, it's hard. Being creative in this world of, you know, whatever, is difficult, but it's just, I don't know. It's tough, Jeffrey.
Okay. So, let's see. How do we want to attack this? How do we want to attack this, Bill? Does the state of the industry or your state of your current relationship with the industry?
Sure.
Does it give you energy to try and push through and go, look, I'm going to figure this out no matter what? Or do you end up going, okay, maybe commercial is not the way forward and I need to look at different ways that I can do this with a camera, that I can make this happen with a camera.
Well,
you've been struggling with this as long as I have.
Sure.
Right.
I've been struggling with this as long as I've been in the industry. As I've been in the industry, this has been the general trend. I mean, if you look at a chart of, you know, constant dollars, what you get paid for X, it's gone down over those 15 years pretty consistently.
Right.
And not that I was making $500,000 a year before, you know. I guess the bigger question becomes not, I mean, I could keep taking pictures and keep making what I want to make and to hell with the money, right? I mean, that's certainly a big part of it. I mean, I wasn't making any money taking pictures of Cisco last week. But I wanted to take those pictures and I found it satisfying and fulfilling.
But could that be enough to maybe go in a different direction for a while and see whether that gets other people satisfied and interested?
Yeah. It's just that, you know, the people who pay for photography, that pool is shrinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just generally, it's just like, you know, it's like, it's the Great Salt Lake. It's drying up.
Right.
You know, and there's more people willing to do a job that used to be $1,000 for $400 because, you know, grabbing at straws. Well, maybe if I do enough $400 jobs, I can, what are you going to, you think you're going to get five $400 jobs a week and then you'll make $80,000 this year? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably not going to happen, you know? Unless you're in a particular place or doing a particular kind of work, maybe if you're a headshot kind of person. Yeah. So it's difficult. What it is to me though is saying like, if my goal is to make money, photography is not a good way to make money. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are certain kinds of photography that are good to make money. You can still make good money shooting high-end weddings and stuff like that, you know. But that's not my world. But it does make me think, you know, of all the things that I've done in my life, and I've done a lot of things, I don't know what else I would do, you know.
I don't know. I think there has to be, I feel like there has to be something in there that, yeah, I don't know.
What do you mean?
Well, there's a certain type of your personal work that you seem to get a lot of joy from. And I recognize this because I do a lot of the same thing. I get a lot of joy from it. You get a lot of joy from it. But then you go, yeah, but there's no way to make money at it.
Right.
But like I said, maybe there is a way that you do the things that you love and want to do, and it's getting that work in front of different people. Are some of the same magazines that you work with going to, you know, buy these pictures of Cisco or pictures like them?
No.
No. But you have a particular enjoyment and a particular expertise at these kinds of photos that unfortunately you seem to only want to relegate to personal work.
And it's not that I want to relegate them to personal work. It's just that, you know, the people who are getting, for example, your example of like, oh, this could be part of a, you know, the season of so-and-so at such and such. You know,
yeah,
pictures,
yeah,
like this.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
There are very specific dance photographers who do that all day long, and those people are going to hire those people for that, and not me, because that's literally.
But why? Maybe they're tired of that aesthetic because they're doing the same thing with dance that you're doing with portraits. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like
Maybe you get to be the new kid on the block, and they go, "Wow, Wadman sees this thing a little differently. Let's give him a try."
There are people doing stuff with dance. I feel like I like that picture. I like those pictures. There are people doing stuff with dance photography that I go, oh my God, the amount of work involved in doing that. And those are the things that end up, they almost become fashion shoots the way they do them. And I'm not doing this to like knock myself down or say that it's not possible, or I'm not trying to be that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just saying that like in my experience, those people work with certain people, and the people who would want to do it with me have absolutely no budget. So it's, you know, it's like not worth doing. There are a billion people who want to shoot dance, for example, because dancers are cool looking and it's fun. And you know what I mean? That's a very, it's like, you know, trying to shoot high fashion models. It's like, well, everyone wants to shoot hot looking people.
Okay. But if those people are in like, and no disrespect, but if they're in like Missouri or Ohio.
Yeah. Those people can't pay me $5,000 to do a shoot.
Yes. But that's not where I was going. Okay. It's a little more difficult to get to the people that you already either have in your circle or it's one stitch away from being in your circle.
Oh, you're saying those photographers are?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but those photographers are in places like New York and LA. Dozens of them. I know dozens of them, you know, that are specialized in doing that kind of work.
I see.
And they have teams and they have studios and they have enough money from jobs or enough stuff where they're just like, it's almost like I'm in a weird, like uncanny valley, right? Where I'm better than a huge bunch of people out there, but I am not the 4% that is getting the really big gigs because I don't know, they've been around for a long time and have been in those worlds. You know what I mean? As the whole thing constricts, it's like that valley just keeps sinking. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, it's like, well, I can't climb the wall in that direction because there's no money in that direction. And I can't climb the wall in that direction because you need money to climb the wall in that direction, you know, in the higher budget direction.
Yeah.
I got an email this morning from somebody in the industry just asking me, you know, oh, how's your 2024 going? Whatever, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And usually when people are asking that, they're asking that because it's not going that well for them.
Right. What do you know that I don't?
Exactly. Like
can you hook me up a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know for sure that that's what they're saying. I'll find out. But, yeah, it's just, it's really interesting. And I don't generally market. And so I'm trying to, you know, I have these signs on my wall. Right. You know, that like the famous signs in front of me that say, you know,
I want to believe
you. Is that what the sign says? Hang in there.
The one from X-Files. Yeah. Oh yeah. Hang in there, baby. The kitten hanging on. Yeah. Wouldn't that be awesome if that's the thing that Bill had above his computer screen? A little kitty. Hang in there, baby. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be funny. But, you know, it's like the old Merlin Mann quote, you know, every day there's somebody's born who doesn't know about the Flintstones.
Right.
You know, there are literally thousands and thousands of people who could potentially hire me who don't have any idea that I exist.
Sure. Now,
how do I do that in such a way that I'm not just blowing a bunch of money on Instagram ads that no one's going to see, you know, or
I think you get a sandwich board. Right, you get a sandwich.
Go stand in Times Square naked, like the naked cowboy.
Yeah, like the naked cowboy, but you got a sandwich board on, and you've got your Fuji. That's what you do.
And I say, we'll smash this camera for food.
Wow, wow. Yeah, but please buy Bill's camera that he loves so much.
It's a perfectly good camera. It's just anyway. Yeah,
I don't know. You know, I think there have often been parallels with us over these many years.
Yeah.
I tend to, and this is just my take on you. I tend to keep coming back to some of the best work you've done hasn't been for anything other than the fact that you wanted to do it.
Sure.
And you could even make the case that it's been some of your most popular work. It made the most money. That's a different thing.
Sure.
But lots of people have seen it, right?
Right.
And you know, the first 365 project that got featured so many places, the Drabbles project that got featured so many places.
Sure.
And I wonder if it's worth not necessarily going back to that pool in a sense, but you've talked recently about doing another body of narrative work just because you want to do it.
Sure. And I do. So I'll tell you what it is.
I'm going to give you the advice that you give me, and you've said this many times to me, and I love you for it. What's stopping you?
I'll tell you what's stopping me. Finding subjects and locations has been almost impossible. I have asked before, just put out public calls of like, hey, anybody want to do this? Anybody know anybody interesting, whatever? And I usually get, I would get 100 people. And now I get 15 people and only three of them are people that I want to shoot.
But what does that mean? What, talk to me about that. What does that
mean? The world has the way world.
Only three I want to shoot with. What does that mean?
Like, I don't know, three that I think will make an interesting photograph. Because when you're doing things like Drabbles and stuff, it has to be people who look like they'd be game to do something fun or have a certain look or, you know, it's like, it's casting. You know.
Do you have a book of Drabbles?
Sure.
You do.
In fact, I actually have like 8 of them. If anybody wants one, I recently got 5 back from my old agent.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm giving you the advice that I need to take myself. You have all of this work and you have this book about like, show it to people and go, look, this is what I want you to do. This is what I'm into.
Oh, sure. No,
we're going to do another one of these.
That's exactly what I've done. I've put up images. It's just, it's weird. It's like the world sees getting their picture taken differently now than they did 15 years ago.
Isn't that strange?
It's so strange. Mm. It's like really odd.
Well, okay, I'm going to take a minute here.
Yep.
Listeners, I have a favor to ask.
Oh boy.
If you are in or near the New York City area and you're interesting or you know somebody interesting, give Bill a call
or send him
a message and go shoot with him.
Locations are actually another big thing. It's so hard to get a location nowadays. I'm photographing.
Probably expensive too for a decent one.
Yeah. I can't spend $600 to like borrow a place for 2 hours for a personal job, for a personal thing. I have a shoot in a couple weeks with a guy who's been on my wish list for a while, who I got in touch with. He's going to be in town, and he said yes. He's staying at a hotel right across the street from my wife's firm's office, right by Times Square.
Oh,
which is, you know, good that he is central.
Yeah,
it's bad because it's Times Square. I don't want to shoot this guy in Times Square. You know, I have 15, 20 minutes with him. I need quiet and I need an interesting location. And Times Square is not an interesting location. It's, you know, full of a billion people and not at all what I want. So I went into the hotel.
But to your comment about the Flintstones, every day somebody's born who's never seen Times Square.
Exactly. You mean for somebody in the pictures?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But that's not what I'm trying to do with him. I need to isolate him. I went by the hotel. And went in and tried to talk to somebody and just say, hey, listen, there's a guy who's staying here next week. I have like 15 minutes with him. Is there a corner? Is there a, you know, a cafe that's closed in the afternoon that I could, you know, just use a corner of for a minute with a window, whatever. And they looked at me as if I was from Mars. They were like, oh, you have to talk to our events people and book something 6 months out. And because everyone is just so... It's like everyone's so scared all the time. You know what I mean? Like everyone getting into places, security, like all of it is so locked down in a way that it never has been before. There's like no room for whimsy. There's no room for just ideas to flow. Everything is like a barrier. You know what I'm talking about? Wow. It's really interesting the way it is. And, you know, and it may be that I end up, I've been offered to use the reception area at my wife's office, which is, you know, a reception area at an office. It's nice. It's up on the 32nd floor of a building. It's got great window light. But it's still an office reception area. You know what I mean? Like it's a very nice office reception area, but it's not what I want to do with this guy. And so it's, you know, it's like, it's this kind of stuff where it's like, man, this is just gets really complicated. Now, if this was a shoot where there was money involved, well, then you have people looking for locations. We can pay location fees. We can get assistance. We can, whatever it is, but this is going to be me and this person for 20 minutes. And I can't waste any of that time messing around trying to find a location and stuff. I need to have it all locked down beforehand. And I need to make it so that he doesn't have to go very far to do it, right? Now, it doesn't matter. This is personal, more personal work, right? Like, it doesn't, if it comes out poorly, it's not the end of the world. But I don't want it to come out poorly. I want it to be great, you know?
Right.
And, so yeah, it's, so even in stuff that is personal work, you know, there, one of those, dream things I did, I don't know, 8 years ago or so, up on the roof where I have the woman reaching out and trying to reach the moon. I mean, we went up on her parents' apartment building's roof and did that picture. It's like, you can't get on apartment building roofs nowadays. You know, there's all kinds of crazy locks and alarms and, you know, it's like there's no spontaneity. Like everything is so difficult because God forbid you go near the edge and you fall off. And it's like, oh, for God's sake, this thing is like the size of a football field up here. I'm not going anywhere near the edge, you know? So it's daunting, and I'm trying to overcome the daunting or think through the dauntingness and try to remain positive. But like every move I make, someone says no. No one says yes anymore. Like everyone's always saying no, and you have to talk them into it. And it's like, it's hard enough to talk myself into it. Now I got to talk you into it over and over and over again. It's tricky and it's daunting. And I don't know where it gets me. It's like, I think if anything, what I need to start doing is do a completely different kind of photography and see if that spikes it a little bit.
And what is that? Do you know what that looks like? You know what? Save that. Cause we're just crossing the hour mark.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this in new type of photography for next time. Cause I think that could be really interesting.
But, you know, just to finish that up and kind of loop back to what I was saying earlier, it's like, I am still the same person. I'm not going to start taking completely different pictures. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's unrealistic to imagine that happening.
No, but it could be enough to twist that kaleidoscope just a little.
Yeah, maybe.
And see where that takes you.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. By the way, I have I'm going to put a link in the show notes of a video that I came upon. I think probably because we were doing research stuff in AI. By the way, I canceled my Midjourney account based upon this video.
Oh.
It's called AI versus Artists, the Biggest Art Heist in History. It's like 45 minutes long, where it's like this guy talking to a bunch of artists in a bunch of different fields, mostly, you know, illustrators and whatever, talking about how, I don't know, it's just, it made me feel icky even playing with this stuff.
All right. Yeah. Put it in there. We can talk about it next time too, because I haven't seen it.
I'll put this in there.
I've got a photographer of the week if you don't have one.
I do have one, but we can use it next time. What do you got?
You sure?
Yeah.
I think you will like this. This is a guy named Tony Notar Berardino.
Okay.
Okay. And for 30 years, he has lived in the Chelsea Hotel photographed residents comings and goings in the Chelsea Hotel. And the work is terrific. It's fascinating. Here, I'm going to send you.
Are you fascinated by the Chelsea Hotel in the way that a lot of people of
the lore that I know of it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, this gets into sort of Deanne Arbus kind of territory, which is kind of fascinating. You think about the cast of characters who have made the Chelsea Hotel, you know, home or a temporary home. And, this is kind of what comes to mind. You know, you look at these photographs and
look at these weirdos,
right? You know, but that, to a certain extent, I would imagine that that's how people in other parts of the country think about certain parts of New York, right?
I was gonna
that
say these things look like 4x5s or 8x10s, and
yeah. Big format. There's been this interest in him over the past several weeks, and I pasted in a few links for you. There's an interview. WNYC did an interview. He's been featured on the New York Times, on Forbes, on Interview Magazine. There's another feature. And it's kind of fascinating that, you know, to your point about locations and the difficulty, and I know that's very real for this guy. I mean, it's this one place, it's this one building that has attracted, you know, these kinds of people. And he is the person who just happened to be there to document and capture all of it. And I just think it's fascinating, both from kind of an ethnography or sociology point of view of just seeing the different kinds of people that come in there.
Yep.
And from the point of view of, I didn't have to go to them, they came to me.
Right.
That's fascinating to me.
Do you think that a lot of these people would have stopped if he was taking pictures with a phone or with like an Instamatic?
You know, it's a good question. And I don't think they would have. I think there is a
part of it is the camera.
There is a fascination with
big cameras.
Big cameras in certain kinds of places.
Yeah.
You know, in other parts of the world, somebody may walk by that completely.
Right.
And not give it another thought. But yeah, I think there's definitely some sort of magic that happens or that can happen in the perception of those kinds of cameras. And I think it happens with wet plate photographers like Shane Balkowicz.
Yep.
I think it happens with, large format, whether you're doing portraiture or landscape, there's an interestingness to this analog device that I'm looking at. It's got moving parts and it's got wood and leather and metal and it's upside down and backwards. And I have to put this thing over my head. There's the degree of physicality in older cameras or older processes, I think is fascinating. I think we still wonder how some of the most amazing pictures we've ever seen came out of this super primitive looking contraption.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's ultimately all there is this box that light goes into like that, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing, that actually works, you know?
Yeah.
That there's a
so
box.
As a little bit of background real quick, yep. And then we'll come back to that.
Sure.
Chelsea Hotel is on West 23rd Street, has long been an iconic setting in New York, a place where artists of all kinds were known to live and work, like Mark Twain, Arthur Miller, Jimi Hendrix, Patti Smith.
It's where Sid and Nancy died, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Photographer Tony Notar Berardino first moved into the hotel in 1994 and has never left.
Yeah.
As a resident, he's shot portraits of hotels, residents, and workers, and he's also witnessed the hotel's turbulent recent history. A new solo exhibition, Notar Berardino's first ever gallery show, displays some of his portraits. It's on view through April 13th. Oh, let's see where it is. Maybe you can go check it out. It is ACA Galleries, Tony Notar Berardino, March 9th through April 13th. Do you know?
10th Avenue, and it's in Chelsea. 23rd and 10th, 24th and 20th and 10th. Yeah.
Okay, so it's through April 13th. What's the date today? March 19th. So I got a month. Right, maybe we can figure that out to meet up there or something.
It just opened last week.
Have lunch at the diner and go check out these
giant prints. They're huge prints. They're 4x6 footprints, which is cool in itself.
Yeah.
Love big prints.
A lot of them are 20x24s, it looks like, that are available for purchase. Oh, there's some really terrific.
Man, these are some weird looking people.
Yeah, there's some really terrific pictures in here. Wow. Yeah, this is great. So check this out. Apparently, I don't know if it's out yet, but I read somewhere there's going to be a book. I don't know if it's out or whether it is still in process. Look at that one of Sam Shepard. Man, I love some Sam Shepard.
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
Yep.
By the way, did you see that Tom Stafford, who was the commander of Apollo 10, which did the sort of final approach setup for Apollo 11, sort of did everything other than the last 60 miles of the Apollo 11 moon landing, died yesterday.
Ah, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. He ended up dying in an old people's home. And you just think, man, it's crazy. The guy literally went to the moon, you know, and ended up in a home. Anyway, ACA galleries. Yeah, I can do this.
Yeah, might be a thing to try and make happen.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Good one.
I like that guy. Yeah, good one.
Different.
Yeah.
Better. What is that? What is that?
Little better, different.
New print.
Yeah. Yeah. Little yellow pills. Little yellow different.
Better. Isn't there better in there somewhere?
A little better, different. I don't know. Something like that.
And I'm going to move the thing to next week about, I want to talk about the 1975's interview where they discuss randomness in their art, in their music.
Oh, okay. All right.
I keep forgetting.
Put it in the show notes.
By the way, can we just say 365? You could listen to On Taking Pictures every day for a year and not repeat us.
Right.
Pretty cool.
And somebody's going to.
I think somebody has.
Probably.
If you have... Send us an email, podcast@ontakingpictures.com, or leave us a voicemail, 929-390-1916, or write us on the threads on the Instagrams. By the way, did you see Stephen Shore left Instagram?
Left Instagram, I did. Yeah, with a vegetable-themed goodbye.
What do you think of that?
I think his assessment is by and large correct, that it's not about photography. It's not about getting to see the people whose work. I rarely see the people I follow unless I go look, because there's so much other stuff, promoted things, reels, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I don't disagree with him. I don't get anything from any of the socials professionally. It's all personal connection. It's all keeping in touch with people and that kind of thing. But although it's funny, Rob asked me, I don't know how this came up, but he said, if you only had a year to live, what would you do? And what's the first thing you would do? And I said, cancel all my social media.
Right.
And he's like, really? Interesting thought.
So why don't you?
Again, because there's still some connection. There's still, I still keep in touch with people through it.
It is very addictive.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know about that part of it. But
I mean, in the sense that, like, even though you know it doesn't really give you all that much, you keep coming back.
Yeah, because I see work that I really like.
Sure.
You know, and I save it to lists. I have multiple lists of things that I refer back to if I want to see something or whatever. But I think there needs to be an evolution of what the next thing is. Because it's certainly not Instagram. It's certainly not, what's the other one? TikTok.
TikTok. Sure.
You know, that kind of thing.
Well, TikTok might be banned next week anyway.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Yeah. It depends on who gets greased for the, vote.
Right.
I would really like to see a return to websites. I would love to see a return to, singular curated visions with blog roles to people or websites that they find interesting. And it's a better format. It's a more engaging format. To see these photos big rather than on the teeny, you know, whatever. Anyway, that's just me being me.
No, I mean, I, you are not wrong at all. I mean, I think this is the classic thing of, if you go all in and let somebody control your distribution, then they control everything, you know? And I think that we all did that because it felt like that was the only way. There was a time there, and still is a time, where it's like, great, you put stuff up on your website. I get, I don't know, 8 visits to my website a day.
Yeah, right.
It's like, okay.
And 4 of them are your mom.
Right. Well, I don't know. Maybe. Hi, mom. Do you look at my website? And
you know she does. She loves your work.
Yeah. She's seen it all. So it's like, okay, well then why do I keep cleaning up my website and making it whatever? I mean, are they looking at my Instagram? Because my Instagram is, while a bunch of stuff that I've done quote unquote lately or posted lately, it's not necessarily my greatest hits. It's not what I'd want people to see if I want them to go look at my work for the first time necessarily. Are you one of those people who curates your stuff where it's like, oh, I'm going to take down these 5 images because they're not up to the rest of them, even though I put them up a month ago.
No, not.
But that's something people do, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I'm writing that down too. It's not my greatest work with regard to social media. I think that's a lot to unpack too.
Okay. All right. We got a lot to talk about then.
Lots to talk about.
Man, I thought we'd be done by 365 episodes.
Yeah, apparently there's still some stuff left in the kitty, as they say.
Well, as always, Jeffrey, it was good to talk to you.
Yep, you too.
We'll talk to you soon.
We'll see you next time.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. This way, say what you want to say, though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long, it's clear to me the this way.